Thank you, everyone, for being here. Steve, thank you so much for the invitation, for introducing us to Tim. It's been an honor to share the space with you. And since, you know, I was thinking about what to share this evening, and I've written two very, very just rough pieces recently, but they're inspired by a recent trip to Mexico that I took, and you know, there's some things that you just feel like you have to share and get out there. So I'm going to share two of those. One I printed out for some of you who came in a little earlier because it's a little difficult to understand. There are a few different voices happening and some tension there. But I also wanted to share a poem that is a little older that I wrote on Fresno, since Fresno figures in Tim's book. I visited Fresno for work, actually. We represented a supermarket in Fresno with roots in the Central Valley, and I would drive with my coworker out there for different, you know, PR initiatives that we had planned. And I had my own conception of what Fresno was and, you know, was dragging my heels. I really have to get in a car and drive for 3 hours, you know, to go do this thing. And I fell in love with it. We're driving in the car and the sun is going down and I'm looking out at just the landscape and hearing voices and imagining just stories and seeing billboards about water and threats to the land and the changing landscape there with recent technological advancements and just the industry and how it's changing, how farming is changing, and how communities are having to adapt. And so I wrote this poem when I returned from that work trip, and it refers to conversations that I was having in the car with my coworker and just different snippets. So again, all the pieces I'm sharing tonight are a little bit of stream of consciousness, so bear with me. But the first poem is called Fresno Lindo y Querido. Down to Fresno in a rental, sun as strong as the smell of onion. Mile after mile, we pass rows of nameless produce. We eat without knowing the origin. Apricots, walnuts, even low white cotton bolls. And I wonder where the children go to school and who lives in the houses down the narrow dirt roads. I learned that here 14-year-olds rise at 4 a.m. to feed boar goats, raise them from birth to auction, and feel pride, not separation anxiety, when their animal is sold. It's a way of life and a responsibility, learning how to care for a thing and let it go. The sun settles pink and red as we listen to NPR radio. I time sunset photos between passing cars and telephone poles. Signs of water wars shuffle through. Make California great again. We listen to talk of Kavanaugh just sworn in. My mind drifts to mujeres from Mexico, 80% of them claiming sexual harassment while working the fields. We pass another billboard that reads, El hombre sabio busca la sombra. A man knows to seek shade. Another sign says employers should provide water and other derechos, como sombra y descanso, shade and rest. Si quiere durar, no olvide descansar. How far life seems in the city, where we sit for hours under buzzing lights, in waterfront buildings, filling mason jars with water to remind us to get up and stretch, refilling each time the jug becomes empty. By this time, the fields are cleared save for souls soft in the dimming light. I listen to your story about your sister, how she died of a heart condition, and how you talk to her as if she were still alive. I look into the grapevines while we talk of the importance of the arts, which your sister loved. And I too hear whispers, whispers of generations, whispers of farmers' hands moving swiftly. We hear a report on Patterson, the Valley farm town where thousands of robots pack goods for Kohl's and Amazon. I picture youth in distribution centers along Interstate 5, getting paid more and learning shipping logistics safe from the oppressive sun, picking bottles of pills and condoms with a machine's assistance may beat the back-breaking toil of gathering fruit, but will it last? And will it pay enough for people to live? We innovate before we meditate and automate so fast. The image of two upturned hands serving fresh food on a table may one day vanish. I stop and wonder, imagine a field with no onion scent. Imagine a field that smells of ghost and of rust, the smell of progress. On a recent trip to Ajijic, Mexico, how many of you have heard of Ajijic? Yes, I traveled by boat to La Isla de Mezcala, where one of the most extraordinary events in the War of Independence occurred. Late in 1812, an indigenous group called Coca, living in Mezcala, which is a small island town on the lake east of the town of Chapala, raised a force and defeated a Spanish force that outnumbered them by hundreds. Over 4 years, Spanish troops continued to attack Lake Chapala's brave men and women and were defeated again and again. How embarrassing, right? After nearly 5 years of fighting, following an epidemic that wiped out many of the defenders of the island, a peace was negotiated and the land was allowed to stay in the hands of the inhabitants. Or so said two young men who showed me and four of my friends around the island, whose fort was built by the Spanish and used until Mexican independence in 1821. The island was then converted to a prison until it was closed in 1855. Our eloquent guides described with so much passion and so much pride that this was their land. Their great, 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 great grandfathers fought to protect it, and grandmothers. And their elders still had a say in what would be done with the land. But the current defense of their lands is a continuation of their ancestors' struggle. And I wonder, how do they deny the Coca their rights as indigenous peoples? Because they wear no traditional dress? Because their language is recognizable? In our complex globalized world, they are still the descendants of the men and women who defended this island against Spanish conquest. Theirs is sacred territory that whispers to them. No one robs El árbol de vida of its roots, and the coca speak the same language of resistance. And the tree that I reference is a huge tree you see upon arriving to the island. Some of you may have seen it if you've heard of Ajijic. It struck me not just by its distinctive color and impressive size, it's gigantic, but also because one of our guides referred to it as the tree that has witnessed hundreds of battles. Imagine that. A huge tree on an island and the bloodshed it's witnessed. I wrote this piece struggling with many questions about the tree and the island and questions of time and memory and the tension between the official narratives and records of the battles that happened there and the oral tradition on the island. If you could speak, what would you say? How many voices would pour forth from Amate? What would we find behind your bark, the color yellowish white, árbol amarillo? What would your roots, the width of a giant fist, say? What would you say, árbol de vida? Maybe you'd sing, maybe you'd cry, maybe your song would be a dream you're trying to revive. Maybe you'd describe what it was like to see the Spanish nearing La Isla, looking dissatisfied, looking afraid, mistaking this huge lake for an ocean. What truths would you tell? Whose truths would you tell? The great, great, great grandfathers telling their grandsons, this is our land. This is our land. We have to keep fighting. What would you say? Would you say, stop trying to salvage what's not yours to salvage? To keep what's not yours to keep? Or would you say, fight harder? What would you say? My friends and I climb your trunk, find grooves between roots. We turn for our guides to take a photo. I want to remember you, all the battles you witnessed, the men and women who died. But what will I do with it? We take a photo to the sounds of our voices and our guides, not yours. We steady ourselves on your sprawling foundation and smile. Back home, I scan for answers in books, academic articles, anything people have written about you and your island. I see photos of you on Instagram, a bride draping her veil over your body, parents placing hands on their children's shoulders before you, smiling. I find conflicting accounts of the battles that happened at your feet. Did you send electric impulses like drummers sounding war through the soil? What do you have to say? What stories would you tell? You who are the island's memory. What will we do to you? Will we strip your bark, cut you into 1,000 pieces, make use of you in the name of religion, make use of you in the name of art, thinking that we are prolonging your life? Will we encase you in glass or some man-made material, charge people money to visit you, to touch you, to pray to you? What will we do to you? If the scientists catch wind of you, they will come to the island, climb out of their boats, make their incisions, use you to study the environment, use your rings to draft proofs of climate change, use you to predict the future, use you as a historical record. Maybe they're the only ones who can. Is that it? Is that what you have to wait for to unlock your power? The scientist and the tree of life, will you ever find each other? And if you do, will it be for the greater good or a disaster? One night in the dark, your bark glowing yellowish white, will you spontaneously burst into flames and the sky above inscribe your real name? Árbol amarillo, árbol de vida, tree who is the island's memory, what would you say? So thank you, to the best of my knowledge, Jalisco has not awarded the COCA community the status of being indigenous people, or at least recognize them as legitimate owners of the lands and the territory. And there are organizations that are trying to turn the island into, I mean, there's no other word for it or phrase, a tourist trap, and charge people to go visit the island. And the people are caught in a battle between relying on tourism and not wanting to convert the island into something that's completely commercialized. It's an issue of privatization of a space that's sacred and communal. This is just the beginning of my relationship with it and writing about it. And if you're curious about it, I really encourage you to research Ajijic and Lake Chapala and La Isla de Mezcala. The following poem is the one that I printed out, and it's dealing with just kind of similar themes about ritual, past, present, future. When I go to Mexico, you know, being half Mexican, half English, German, whatever the hell else I am, I feel out of place. And I feel like even, like I don't have a right to write about ritual in Mexico or even speak broken Spanish in my poems. So this is a poem just kind of wrestling with that. And Malecón is the boardwalk in Ajijic. It's really beautiful. Along the Malecón in Ajijic, Jalisco. Along the Malecón, young lovers press foreheads and speak in soft tones, not on phones, but together in old-fashioned romance. Water laps against the legs of white egrets and against concrete stairwells to the lake. Night or day, there are rhythms to sway by and feel in sync with. Au contraire to US news, you can peer without fear in the water. Down the boardwalk, there is no violence, no trash, not a single syringe, nothing amiss, just leafy trees under quiet streetlights, installations of art, and a skater's paradise. Worlds away, there is feces on Market Street, San Francisco. Writers smoke crack on the subway. Tech apps plaster walls. A home in the war zone Tenderloin has Alcatraz-themed doorways like jail cells and prisoner bunk beds to appeal to Airbnbers. Asking price is $2 million. Along the Malecón, families picnic and tourist eyes strain toward the sun to watch birdmen perform centuries-old ceremonies. On vacation, we happen upon heritage like the Dance of the Flyers, still performed by indigenous-looking men in pockets all around Mexico. Today, five arrayed in the brightest red and matching boots the color of ravens ascend a pole taller than any tree in our immediate surroundings. Hard to tell when so long ago the ritual began with cutting trees in the forest and ended with dances in the village. So long ago, before the Spanish conquest, not sure whether this one was felled. It could even be plastic. Still, the birdmen climb one by one up the rungs to the sound of flute played hypnotically. They perch at the very, very top on wooden scaffolding as four corners of a fragile square. Centered at the pinnacle and dancing, El Capitan plays sounds the length of a heartbeat with silence the width of an ocean league. The four dancers and he create a circle of energy with timing and harmony only nature could master. Tethered with rope around their waist, the four spin downward in moments that seem like hours. Tethers lengthen as the voladores fall together 13 times for each of the four, 52 revolutions, the number of years in the Aztec calendar round, or so I read. When the timing is right, they land softly as warm petal air to the ground. What is the meaning of this crazy, mesmerizing, death-defying spectacle? Do they symbolize sacredness of falling fruit, birds, or drops of rain? Are they praying for fertility? As a witness, what do I pay? Along the Malecón, young lovers press foreheads and speak in soft tones. Upon closer look, they appear forlorn, a private moment in a public space, knowing nothing lasts forever and still asking for love. The Spanish called it La Danza de los Voladores. I do not know the pre-Hispanic name. Thank you.